Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Today we continue with candidates for mayor and city council. I'm very happy now to welcome Miguel Chavez. He is the third candidate for mayor. We weren't able to have him on the air yesterday. We're delighted to have him on the air today. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you for having me and for providing this opportunity to all of the candidates, and especially this candidate, Miguel Chavez, because I did a campaign spending pledge, and I think it's safe to say that I am the only progressive candidate in the mayoral race. And I say that because of the pledge. The pledge says that I put a total campaign limit, total campaign contributions, of no more than $60,000. We're not going to meet that goal, but that was the suggested dollar amount if and when we do public financing. That's one piece of campaign reform and ethics reform as it relates to campaigns and spending.
So that's an interesting point. If you were elected mayor, one thing you want to do is campaign finance reform for the city of Santa Fe?
Well, I think that we need to do a campaign reform both on the ethics side so that campaigns are open and transparent and easy to read, so that our campaign finance reports can be read even by a layperson, because some of the reporting that's been done regarding my campaign, reporting that was done by the New Mexican, has been inaccurate as far as the pledge is concerned. So it needs to be open and transparent and easy, user-friendly. I think the way it plays out is that you have two components in election reform or campaign reform. You have campaign spending, limits, putting limits on campaign spending, putting limits on contributions, and limiting the dollar amount and where the money's coming from. And then you have the ethics part of it, being open and transparent, you know, providing bank statements and campaign finance reports that are easy to understand, so that there's no confusion when they're interpreted, right, how things work. So the pledge in my campaign says two things. We put a total campaign, a pledge of a total campaign contributions of no more than $60,000. We also put an individual limit of $1,000 for individuals, groups, businesses, and organizations. That's the total cap that we'll accept from any of those mentioned.
You said just a moment ago when we started that you are the one progressive candidate. What does that mean? Tell us what it means to be a progressive candidate.
I think I said that I was the only progressive candidate, and I define that in self-imposing this campaign's pledge, doing it, taking personal responsibility before we have an ordinance in place. Being progressive in the sense that it depends completely, 100%, on volunteers. We don't have $100,000 or even $50,000 to pay campaign managers and other people to do work.
So let's talk about some of the other issues beyond that, because we have a limited amount of time. What are the issues that, for you as city councilor, have been the most really burning and important?
Well, I think the first issue that I would address in the limited time that we have is the structure that we have in place now to appoint the city manager. And in our form of government, the city manager happens to be the strong link in that chain until we change our form of government. And to do that, we'd have to go through, amend the Home Rule Charter and hopefully do that through a referendum. So elected to the office of mayor, what I would do is change that structure and change the process even ahead of a referendum and amending the Home Rule Charter. And I would do that by structuring or putting in place an open, transparent recruitment and appointment of the city manager with clear duties and responsibilities defined, so that the city manager, the city council, the mayor, and the public knows what the city manager's duties and responsibilities are. And I'm proposing that to change the structure because the citizens now in 4 years have had three city managers. You have a Zenith Kepler, who Mayor Koss appointed 4 years ago, lasted about 7 or 8 months. Then to fill that void, we moved Galen Bueller from the Water Division into the city manager's office. And then now, about 6 or 7 weeks before this election, the mayor decided to move Robert Romero from Public Works into the city manager's office. So the job is not posted. No one has to apply. No one has to be interviewed. The only requirement is that you be connected to City Hall. And it's not hired based on only on qualifications, like I think it should be. And so that's one of the things that I really think needs to change. And in the 10 years that I've been on council, that's been the most frustrating, because the current structure says that appointment has to be approved by 5 councilors minimum. So if that's all the city, if it's only 5 councilors that are approving the appointment of that city manager, is the city manager only working for those 5 councilors? Is he or she working for 8 councilors? Or should that person really be a public servant and hired to work to serve the public?
We're talking to Miguel Chavez, city councilor and candidate for mayor of the city of Santa Fe. Let's talk about crime. It's an issue we've talked about with the other mayoral candidates. There is a problem of crime. Maybe we're not the worst city in the nation, but we have real problems, and some of them are related to gangs, which is, for a lot of people, both bothersome and scary and a real threat to their daily lives.
Well, in the door-to-door that I've done and in the work that I've done over the last 10 years, people are concerned about residential burglary and don't always make the connection or blame the gangs for that. I think that it's probably safe to say that it's part of the phenomenon that we're dealing with. But public safety as it relates to residential burglaries is something that's not to be taken lightly. It is a concern of many of the residents throughout the city. People want to feel, they want to know that they can be safe, feel safe in their homes and in their neighborhoods. So how do we accomplish that? Working within the limited budget that we have and limited manpower that we have right now. Because we could, you know, go after additional funding. We could, through the stimulus funding or whatever. And so funding is always going to be a challenge. So to be effective in using the resources, financial and human resources that we have currently, it seems that one option that we have in place that works, can work well, and we can expand on, is working with neighborhood associations working hand in hand with the police department to expand neighborhood watch and citizens on patrol, using other community assets like Association of Realtors. They're in the neighborhoods on a daily basis. How could we, you know, what would it take to recruit someone like them to assist in a neighborhood watch so that they could inform neighborhood associations or the police department about things that are different or things that have changed in the neighborhood, right? So I think it's sort of taking ownership and accepting more responsibility as individual citizens and homeowners to work with, in partnership with, the police department, neighborhood associations, Association of Realtors, and maybe others, right, to augment to make our limited resources go further. And in some cases, when neighborhood associations are well organized, we have seen a decline in some of the residential burglaries in those neighborhoods.
Very interesting. Now let's talk about everybody's not favorite subject, water.
Mm-hmm.
Any fresh ideas about water? Any accomplishments that you're happy about over your term as city councilor?
Well, one thing that comes to mind is that we had a rain barrel program, a rebate for a rain barrel program, and for some reason, for a couple of reasons, one being that we wanted the manufacturers and people selling these rain barrels to follow certain guidelines and meet certain manufacturers' specifications to be able to benefit from the rebate program. And it got hard to enforce because people that are in the business of selling products have different sources, different manufacturers for those products. And not everybody was following the rules, and we had to have people sign an affidavit saying that you know, this product is from this manufacturer and it's meeting these specific specifications, right? Specifications are that it had to be a certain size, it had to have a lid that could be screwed on with a wire mesh, and it had to have a spigot on it. The wire mesh does a couple of things. It keeps animals out, it keeps mosquitoes from populating in large numbers, and the spigot allows you to easily use the water, again being user friendly, so that you can distribute that water into your landscaping. So you're trading a 1 gallon of potable water for water that's harvested from rain. That, because it was hard to enforce the ordinance, it was hard to manage. Staff decided that we should discontinue it, and I disagreed with that because that's the easiest, it's the most basic, it's the most affordable. And so I was able to amend the ordinance to include that again, so it's now back in place. So that's one thing, and I think we have to, again, start at the bottom, start where it's most affordable to a larger population, right?
Right.
And so that's one thing. Overall, I think that the residents of the city of Santa Fe have done an excellent job in conserving water, and they need to be commended. But if we're saving water and we continue to allocate it, then what have we really saved, right? So I think water availability and water quality have to go hand in hand, because we know that the quality of our water is under attack on a daily basis, whether it's from natural occurring phenomenon that affects our water quality, or whether it's pharmaceuticals that are ending up in our water supply. We need to be very careful because we have a limited water supply, and so we have to safeguard that as much as possible.
Very tricky, because it's hard to test for those things, and it's even harder to get them out.
Right. And so, you know, what are we looking at as a city, as a state, and as a nation when it comes to our available supply of fresh water that's not contaminated,
right,
either by nature or by man?
Right.
Right. We have the San Juan Chama Diversion Project, which will be bringing imported water into our system. And even there, because of the work that's done in Los Alamos, there's a question about the water quality that we're bringing into our system. And so we have, you know, some safety measures to monitor that and shut down the system if there's a plume of contamination that needs to be filtered out. In the area around the 2 mile area around the city, where we've accommodated growth without really planning for it, we've created situations where you have more septic tanks closer to individual wells. And if those septic tanks are not maintained properly, well, first, if the septic tanks are not designed and not updated and not maintained, then it poses a threat to your well water. So we have noticed increased levels of nitrates in that 2 mile area. We need to really be conscientious about our supply, whether it's an individual well, whether it's the water in our watershed, the well in our city well field, because we do have the city well fields. And so we need to focus on the quality of the water. Then you have the amount, how much water we have allocated, which is 5,060 acre feet a year, and that's it. Even with the imported, with the new imported water, we're still permitted for that number.
Miguel Chavez is city councilor from District 3, running for mayor of the city of Santa Fe. I want to thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm very happy now to welcome city councilor Rebecca Wurzberger, who is running for office once again in the March 2nd elections from District 2. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Good morning.
So why are you running again?
Well, the flip answer is because I lost my mind, right? But the real answer is that I do believe in 8 years I've made a difference. And I love this work. I particularly love the policy work and problem solving. And over the past 8 years, I think I've made a difference in the major issues that face the city. Starting, I ran first in 2002. And the big issue at that time was water, water, water. We were in the middle of the drought. From that era, I helped develop the water budget, develop the legislation for the Buckman Diversion Project. So I've been able to take issues of the time and move forward, working very closely with the other councilors to make a difference.
So when you come in as a brand new city councilor, maybe with stars in your eyes or idealistic or maybe a little bit nervous or whatever, what's the learning curve like?
Well, I think the most important thing that I've learned, and I think that's what will make me a better counselor even in the future or wherever I end up in politics, is you learn that the I word is really irrelevant. Working on a council is working on a team. And you have to have the skills and the ability and the desire to craft legislation and craft solutions upon which you can get consensus. Those who say, I did this and I did that, even the way I just described, you know, in the beginning of my career, you can't do it unless you can work with the rest of the people around the table. And it's a very interesting process in that you're suddenly married to people that perhaps you never would have met before.
You wouldn't have even gotten engaged to.
You might have not even gotten engaged. You might not have even had a cup of tea with them, right? And I don't want to be hateful about that, but it's true. And so you have to sit down and figure out a way to work with them. And I think I've done a good job of that. And then you had the whole county side. When I was first on the council, the county was considered an evil empire. And we've really worked through that, you know, starting with the Buckman Diversion Project. And right now doing collaborative work on affordable housing. So that's also why I stay, because I'm so excited about those opportunities.
It seems to me, and please, I'm willing to be wrong about this, so correct me, but it seems that Santa Fe is a city where democracy is actually pretty active and functional.
Oh, I think democracy is really active and functional. Now, one of the principles of democracy is a lot of time a small group of people can have a huge effect, and some people think that's undemocratic. But to me, that's one of the essences of democracy, is that people, whether it's 1, 2, 3, 5,000, get together about a community issue and can make a difference. And I think we do that in Santa Fe.
But also during the election cycles and then during the city council meetings, it seems like we're a pretty vocal bunch as cities go.
We are a vocal city.
So
and that's good.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the actual issues. We've talked with the mayoral candidates and some of the other city council candidates about something that is fundamental, which is financial stability. That's one of the planks on your platform.
Right. That's the primary reason that I ran. I have served on finance for 8 years, and I have learned a lot. And again, I've learned a lot about how to work with the other councilors to collectively look at how we're making decisions around that issue. This last year was the toughest year of our budget. We cut $15 million out of the budget. Right now, with the gross receipts tax, a deficit over the past 5 months, the trend has been down every month. We have another $1.5 million to cut between now and in this budget between now and June. So
how do you do it?
Well, we set a process in place. First of all, when the principals, I made the motion on the budget that said we would not go further into reserves, and I feel very strongly about that, and I won the argument with my counselors to proceed with no additional going into reserves. So now we're going to have to find other ways to do that. And the city manager, previous city manager, put in place a process for looking at how we restructure and become more efficient. And we're hoping, at least for this year, that we'll be able to look at those reports that are coming out. They'll all be to the Finance Committee by the end of February, and will provide the basis for us moving forward between now and June to see what cuts have to be made, what positions can be combined. We haven't been filling positions, and we're going to have to stay with that. And we're going to have to hope that the gross receipts tax comes back up a little bit, or we'll be in a bigger problem.
Right. Let's talk about another thing that I know is dear to your heart, is the creative industries, creative Santa Fe, the creative nature of this city as a way of moving the city in good directions.
I'm so passionate about that. You'll recall, I think the last time we talked perhaps was around the creation of the UNESCO network here, and then that led to the first international conference on creative tourism,
right?
And for which we had over 300 people from around the world come. No, we haven't had thousands of visitors come back yet, but I'm convinced we will. The spinoffs of that conference are amazing. In the last month, we just had two training sessions. We have 90 artists now on our website, a special website for artists showing creative experiences that they will share, either with locals or with tourists. And so we had two training sessions these past two weekends in February, maybe one in January, one in February, where artists were exposed to ideas for how do you welcome people into your studio? How do you really create a hands-on experience for people who aren't artists? But the trends show very clearly that this is an up-and-coming worldwide trend, and that's why I'm so jazzed about it. I say, you know, if we could get 0.001% of the Chinese travelers here, we would not have a deficit.
Right.
You know, we continue to take our regular tourists, and that's great, but I believe we really must expand internationally. But we do it in a way that's authentic. It's not a way of just branding the city.
Right.
We have all this beautiful culture here. We have artists who are so creative, and it's making that connection.
Another problem that I think is a little less talked about than what is, I don't know, it's because it's been snowing so much, but is water.
Well, I think people are more comfortable with water. Certainly, when you factor in the big unknown of global warming, you know, how can we really plan for that?
Yeah.
Other than to say, everybody just turn off the water right now. But I think...
Well, stop growing food.
Stop growing food. You know, stop watering any plants.
Stop eating,
you know. I think that we have made progress in water, starting with the Buckman Diversion Project, which will allow us to rest our Buckman wells. And that project is now on time and on budget. It'll be finished in 2011. I've been co-chair of that for 8 years. And that was another reason I wanted to stay on board, to make sure that that is finished. So I think, and also what the citizens have done with respect to conservation. And we've got major conservation efforts. We just announced again today the toilet retrofit program is still in existence, but we've retrofitted 40,000 toilets.
Every toilet in the city.
Now we're going to get to do the county, right? But we're instituting new ways to do that. Washing machines, the kind of equipment that you put on a faucets, outdoor rain system so you can control how much your garden is getting watered. So we have a whole lot of incentives around those areas as well that should help us to continue to conserve.
We've got just about another minute. Do you want to talk about affordable housing? You want to talk about it? Just
I'll
leave it up to you.
I want to talk about affordable housing. That's when you asked me what have I learned. I had a real aha moment 2 years ago when the McCune Foundation did the study that showed the economic impact of not having people live here who work here. And that is about $300 million again every year that we lose because the people who earn their money here working for the city and the state drive to Albuquerque or drive to Española, and they don't spend their money. That's our primary source of income is GRT. They don't spend it here. They don't stop and buy their diapers. They go home and they do it. This is a major force that we need to address, a major issue. We've had it on our agenda, but we need to ratchet it up. and look at it not only as a social issue, which it is, because this isn't the community I moved to 20 years ago.
No, you could afford a house.
You could afford a house. You
had, and there weren't these gazillion-dollar spec houses.
You had neighbors. When I moved here, coming from L.A., I was so excited. There were only 7 houses over a million. You know how many are there? There are now over 250, I think.
Yeah. As I said to Mayor Cost, divide them all up and make them into affordable housing.
I don't know that that'll happen, but I think in terms of how we spend our water, how we encourage the building community to get involved and address the issue of housing, it needs to be tied to affordable or workforce housing. That includes moving up housing. It's not just, you know, the very first-time home buyer.
Rebecca Wurzberger is running for re-election in District 2. Thanks so much for being with us.
Okay.
I'm happy now to welcome Stephanie Beninato. She is running for City Council in District 2. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi, Mary Charlotte. Thanks for having me today.
So why did you decide to run?
You know, I decided to run because of some unfortunate experiences I had with the city, and I realized that a lot of people had them, and that we needed a voice at City Council. And so I'm running so that that our district can be represented as a whole and not just have special interests, so that there can be transparency, affordability, accessibility, accountability, and fairness in city government, that the city can be encouraged to be more professional and competent, and that we can really diversify the economy and not just, you know, talk about tourism as art, hospitality, and tourism, but actually diversify tourism and also diversify the economy to promote alternative energy, alternative healing, peace studies, and film.
What do you mean by diversify tourism?
What I mean, and I've been in the tourism business for 18 years, going into 18 years now, is not just promote high-end tourism, but also promote ecotourism and family adventure tourism, so that we're appealing to different segments of the market.
When you say diversify the rest of the economy, you mentioned film.
Film and alternative energy, alternative healing, and peace studies.
So,
and sustainable, and I will say sustainable communities as well, encompassing some of those industries.
Peace studies.
Yes.
As an economic driver for Santa Fe.
Yes.
How would that work?
Well, I think of it as like an institute, like the Santa Fe Institute, where we have scholars and people who have been peacemakers come and develop models that can work in different situations that would help promote peace, would help promote understanding of other people's point of view, better communication, those kinds of things. And then people would come here to study that. So that's how I see peace studies. And given that there's a fairly strong peace movement here, it seems a logical development on the resources that we actually have here.
You started out by saying that you'd had some unfortunate experiences that made you feel not so great about city government. Tell us a little more about that.
Well, I had a neighbor who was doing a development, and basically the code concerning historic styles was ignored. And there were other things. I mean, the house got too close to my property line. My solar easement was affected. We have since actually settled. We just settled. And that was due to my persistence over 2+ years. And as a result, I've also settled with the city. So, you know, I am a creative problem solver who works to resolution and who works to good communication. And that's what I've done in this situation as well.
So what are some of the changes that you think need to happen in City Hall to make it more transparent, more accountable, some of the things you started talking about?
Well, for one thing, I think we need a stronger ethics board. I think when our city government doesn't recognize that if somebody commits electoral fraud and they get caught, that they should actually drop off the city board. When a city councilor takes a job with a county that's a no-bid contract, or a person who has gotten a grant, a no-bid grant to work for the city, then is appointed to a land use board, and the grant has to do with land use, and not reveal that and not even have a clue that that's a conflict of interest, that to me is the kinds of things I would like to work on to change. I would like the city government to be more transparent in very simple ways, like having organizational charts online with people's telephone numbers and emails, having neighborhood association information easily available online, having applications and permits and things like that online. So you don't have to make public records requests, so that you don't have to go down there, so the information is accessible. Some of this stuff I know is happening in land use. I think it's good. Accountability, again, this idea of, you know, thinking about these contracts that people in the city government or working for the city have taken without, and then being on boards without, you know, getting it. Those kinds of things in terms of accountability, but also, again, and I'm most familiar with land use, historic preservation, because those are areas that I've worked in a lot, as well as water and environment. But they're just accountability, like you have a checklist, and now I think it could be electronic checklist. So you can't skip things, you can't forget. And as the code gets more complex, so we have this green code, that's really another bureaucratic overlay. And again, I would have liked to have seen that more integrated into the regular code. But there again, it's going to get harder to remember everything. I think we need teams, working in teams, not just isolated, this is my job, it's not my job, but you understand what your team is doing. You can help your team member by going, oh, I see this might be a problem, maybe you want to look at it. You know, sort of developing sort of a team accountability. And again, accountability as you go through this process of approving different things, where it's very clear what you're doing and when you did it.
Talk more about alternative energy, which you mentioned a moment ago as something that Santa Fe could cultivate. In what ways? How do you see that?
Well, for one thing, in the Northwest Quadrant, I would like to see at least part of that developed as an alternative energy grid. And there we could have wind turbines and solar collectors that either the city could use or it could sell. And I would use some of that for affordable housing.
And now, in the Northwest Quadrant, instead of the proposed development there?
Yes, at least for two, replaced at least part of that development, if not all of it, and then have affordable housing throughout the town. Rather than having it all in one place, which, again, we did that in the Southwest. It produced some problems. It seems like we're just going to recreate some of these problems in the Northwest Quadrant. So I would do that as that. I would also develop alternative energy businesses. There are some here now, but really encourage and promote and foster that those kinds of industries so that we have something that needs replacement, you know, has a cycle of replacement that a large range of people will use, so that there's industry here that doesn't fluctuate as much as, say, tourism and art does, for example.
We're talking to Stephanie Beninato, running for city councilor in District 2. We've got about 2 minutes left. Would you like to talk about water? I'll leave it up to you.
I'd like to talk a little bit about water, sure. You know, I've worked a lot on water cases. I worked on a case having to do with the Middle Pecos Conservancy District.
When you say cases, as an attorney? Or?
Actually, as a historian, doing research on water use. So one was on the Gila River having to do with Apache's water use, which was really interesting. And also then on the Pecos, and that had to do with just general use and, you know, how much water, what they were using it for. In terms of water, I mean, water's been a problem. Water should be the defining measure of how we determine how we grow and how fast we grow. I think that, you know, we're counting on certain projects to bring water. I don't think they're going to bring the water we think they're going to bring. I think in terms of our efforts at conservation, that we should always think we're in a drought and that we should have, you know, that we should have permanent conservation measures. I think there needs to be more gradations between 10,000 gallons and 20,000 gallons, and that there has to be more of a penalty at the 20,000 gallons.
Meaning household use.
Household
having
use.
Having certain levels out above which it costs more.
Right. And then I think below 10,000, there should be incentives to save. If you're saving water, that you get an incentive like maybe $1 for every 2,000 gallons you save. Or if we could really figure out a way to recycle water up the river, so you really repump it, you're losing some from evaporation, but if you saved enough water, you could donate your saved water to the river. And you know what I mean? And then that project could maybe work without really using a lot of water that we actually need. So those are some of my ideas about water.
Stephanie Beninato is running for City Council in District 2. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to people on the radio.
I'm happy now to welcome Doug Nava. He is running for City Council in District 1. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I appreciate it greatly.
Now, this is a three-way race. We heard yesterday from Russell Simon and incumbent Chris Calvert. District 1, why did you decide to run for City Council?
Well, the whole vibe of City Council is not something that's popped in my head overnight. This is something I've looked at for years. I work for taxation revenue. I'm a tax examiner for the state of New Mexico. And, you know, my challenge to run for City Council has probably been more in my head the past few years than it has probably when I thought about it many years ago. You know, many years ago, it was just that local boy that wants to see if he can make good and do something for the citizens of the city of Santa Fe. Not just born and raised natives, citizens as in everybody. I mean everybody. And in the past few years, you know, we've looked at economic crises and we've seen all this stuff. And to know that that I hear this every day from people as on the state level to say, well, maybe there's something I can do on the city level. I can't make decisions. I'm not a legislator. I'm not a senator. I'm not all that stuff. But as an elected official for city council, to maybe make decisions that benefit everybody that do make their way on the other side of the fence when it comes to the state. Or maybe as an elected official, it might be easier for me to reach a senator or a legislator so they'll listen to me. Because sometimes elected officials listen to elected officials.
That is so true. What are some of the issues that you're most passionate about? What are the things that people are coming to you with?
Well, you know, I'm known as the tax man. I'm known as the grocery receipts man, I think, of this whole election. You know, the person who understands how revenue is generated into the city. You know, I work where the revenues are collected. So, you know, I understand the percentages that go over. And we all know that when it comes to the budget of the city of Santa Fe, it is based off our grocery receipts revenue. And we, you know, hopefully to educate the public on the city level so that the gross levels do come through, you know? I mean...
What kind of education are you talking about?
On getting their grocery receipts filed on time.
Ah.
Making sure that they're in compliance. Making sure, you know, how important it is. You know, when I hear people every day that's... When I say, oh, there's no money for schools and there's no money for this and there's no money for that and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well... Are you reporting your gross receipts?
Yeah, and the relationship between, on the one hand, wanting to keep everything that you think is yours because you earned it, and on the other hand, wanting to have services.
Exactly. And, you know, and I teach a class for the state of New Mexico on how to run your gross receipts. And I've taught that class many a times in the past few years. And today was my first chance back for the beginning of the year after a race. And it's funny because a lot of stuff that I've learned on the city level, I kind of incorporated in this class. It's like I, you know, to make sure things go right. And you know, I've had a few people who are scared that I'm running for city council. I think they think I'm out there as some kind of like the tax collector. He's coming forth and blah blah blah. You know, and people, so I mean, I had one person that said that he's worried about somebody like me being on city council because I guess he thinks I'm out there to shut everybody down. And I'm like, you kidding? I'm not out there to shut you down. I'm out to keep you open.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that's what my thing is. You know, one thing that we keep talking about and I've heard other people talk about is through the election, through a couple of my opponents is, you know, making it so people can have businesses in the future, making it people can do this. You know, I'm all for business in the future, but I think I would rather concentrate on keeping the ones we have now so that we can have a future because... If everything's shutting down now, then what is it really the future?
What are some of the other issues that are of concern to you? Let's talk, for example, about water.
Well, you know, my issues on water, I think, are the issues of everybody that's from here, to make sure we're using our water efficiency correctly. And once again, that's the form of education. Every year, you know, we read in the Santa Fe Reporter the top 10 water users and all these people that do this. And you read that. And when they contact some of these people have said, oh, they lived out of town. They didn't know they had a water pipe bust and you know, and these high usages and stuff. And just now, I was just reading about this and looking over this last night when I would say, when it comes to water usage, it comes to education once again. Education to show people that if the water line breaks, but you know, hopefully, I'm going to try to contact the city water people to say, do we monitor if somebody's bill water usage goes increasingly overnight? Is there like some kind of monitor that, you know, that they can say, oh, wow, within a week, within 3 days, these people went from this many gallons to this thousand of gallons, and if that's the case, let's catch that water line instead of these people finding out the hard way, because then they have to contest the bill. I mean, I know that whole process. I think everybody in Santa Fe somewhere has had that problem. And running for city council, I've walked around and I asked people water and stuff. And one of the biggest things I've heard, and it actually makes me just don't know what to say, is when I mention water, people say, well, Las Campanas waters all their grass. And I'm like, you know, don't worry about Las Campanas anymore. Worry about yourself. You know, if they're not following the rules, then you make the better service and you make the rules, you know, and get your minds away from that. And I see people saying what's good for them should be good for everybody. You know, we all want fairness along the line, but maybe it's just a matter of your own personal conscience and your own personal use. You know, I know for myself, my home has a pitched roof, and the water runoff from the winters and the snow is caught on, and it drips right into the trees. You know, and that's something that I did, and I have xeriscaping, and I don't plant huge plants every year. And I, you know, it's, first of all, it's my way of being smart about it. You know, I do have a little bit of grass in the backyard, and luckily, you know, this past summer we had a great moisture, so I didn't have to water consistently. But at the same time, I want to have the enjoyment of that too. But I've just made sure to be smart about it. And if you collect the rainwater and you collect all that stuff, you know, you can do good. And I know a lot.
And you can also start supporting businesses that help you do that.
Yeah, you know, and you know, even a lot of our local businesses have the large silos that collect water. So I think everybody is conscious about it. It's just a matter of, what is it? The domino effect. It's the domino effect, and just do it for yourself, you know, and. Because I know if I look for city council, my gosh, I know they monitor city council water. So but I'm smart about it now, so I'm not worried about it for the future.
We're talking to Doug Nava, who is running for city council in District 1. Affordable housing for you, as somebody who's lived here all your life, must be something that you've really been watching closely.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we know that affordable housing has been on city council all the way back to Mayor Jaramillo. I think she, to me, has always been the big one that endorsed it and kind of brought that up. And I agree with affordable housing. At the forum with the Real Estate Association that we had this past week, you know, that was one question, affordable housing. And when it came to me, I said, you know, it's only 30%, which is nothing. 30% is nothing.
30% of any development
of that's development, that's been 30%. I said, you know, that's pretty minimal, you know, for what we ask for here in the city. I would love to see more affordable housing, just because we have a lot of people who have left to go live elsewhere. You know, even a lot of our public safety aides commute on a daily basis, and we don't need that. And of course, when they leave, they take their grocery receipt money elsewhere. You know, so they stay home on weekends in places like Rio Rancho, and they support it there compared to being here, because they just come to work and they leave. And I want everybody to benefit from Santa Fe. You know, I want people who might just, you know, there might be that couple that has retired here. And they retire here not with millions of dollars, but they, you know, they want to retire here because they love it here. And, you know, I'm fortunate to be born and raised here. So if I love it here, then let everybody else love it here too. And if we make it affordable, people stay. And when people stay, grocery receipts get generated. You know, it's like the food chain. You know, you feed me, I feed you, and And I'm very for affordable housing. And I know with North Quadrant being proposed, you know, that should be a point of affordable housing. And yes, the people of Northside, Santa Fe don't want it. And I, you know, my views on North Quadrant, you know, if I was elected, I probably would have voted no for it. Not because I'm against it, just because I think let's finish one project at a time before we start building another project. Just because we have open land doesn't mean we have to stick a building or a fence on every open land. But on the same side to that, I'm fortunate to be raised on north side of town, which is a historical district, which is, you know, I know that North Quadrant, you'd be off the interstate, but you're still on this side of town, and everybody deserves to be part of everything.
Doug Nava is running for city councilor in District 1, and we're just about out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
And I appreciate it, and to all those people out there, it's not a matter about who you vote for. Use your amendment rights and vote.
Vote, indeed. Thank you.
Have a good day to all of you.
And we were supposed to speak today with Ron Trujillo, who is running unopposed in District 4. And ladies and gentlemen, there just isn't enough time. So what we're going to do is have Ron Trujillo here tomorrow morning on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. And we will just extend our mayoral and city council coverage another day, or at least a few minutes into the next day. We've got lots of other good stuff scheduled for you tomorrow. Once again, Election Day is on Tuesday, March 2nd, from 7 in the morning until 7 in the evening. Early voting is going on through the 26th of February. For more information about voting and elections and candidates and everything else, you can go to santafenm.gov. I want to let you know also that tomorrow morning on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe, after Ron Trujillo, we're going to be speaking to Sandy Buffett of Conservation Voters New Mexico about what's going on in the legislature in terms of environmental legislation, and we'll be speaking to Madi Sato, musician and vocalist, and hearing some of her music as well. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news, followed by KSFR's award-winning news team, and then jazz.